This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The pop megastar Beyoncé surprised her fans last week by releasing an album called Lemonade. She spearheaded a massive collaboration of artists that includes the award-winning Kenyan-Somali poet Warsan Shire, the unabashedly political hip-hop artist Kendrick Lamar, the tennis superstar and role model Serena Williams, as well as Jack White from the White Stripes and Led Zeppelin's Robert Plant. But continuing her trajectory toward embracing a more socially conscious approach to music and artistry, Queen Bey also sampled a Malcolm X speech and showcased the mothers of black men killed by police. Central to the critical acclaim that her work is garnering is the sense that Lemonade is, quote, unapologetically black. The overwhelming majority of people featured in the visual one-hour version of the album are black women. My guest is Shadria Labouvier. She is a journalist and a writer for Elle magazine. Welcome to the show, Shadria.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, I sort of agonized a little bit about doing this story only because I feel like, you know, does Beyoncé really need any more attention than she's already getting? She's such a superstar. She's so mainstream. You know, there's so much media that's already covering her. And then I thought, what she's doing now, I think it requires a little bit of attention from progressives, maybe a lot of attention from progressives, because for a mainstream artist like herself to go toward a place of social consciousness, being conscious of race and racism is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
I think for her to be so explicit, yes. But I think when you look at the history of black pop stars, this is very much part of the DNA. And I think that people just find it so jarring that Beyoncé is to the mainstream. And when we say mainstream, we largely mean non-black. It seems like, oh wow, like Beyoncé is so black, but Beyoncé has been black for a very long time. And I think she's been sort of speaking in code on some of her messages, I mean, some of her albums, but you know, her aesthetic is very Southern black. The beats that she uses are very Southern black. I think that she obviously is more pronounced and more amplified, but she's never hidden that. And I think people sort of have had selective hearing about that or selective absorption of those messages. And so I think that Beyoncé is just sort of clued in with what's going on socially and politically with so many black people. And this is a time where so many black people are just rejecting the terms and conditions of assimilation and are just being unapologetically themselves.
And I'm also wondering if what her trajectory tells us is that in order to be embraced by the mainstream, artists of color do have to submerge or feel like they have to submerge those things about them that make them who they are, those cultural hallmarks that might be jarring to a white audience. And then once they're established, feel like they can more freely be themselves. Or is that too simplistic?
I think, you know, I mean, for what we're talking about, that it is simplistic, but I understand what you're saying, and it's so complex and it's so dense and it's so packed. I think that there is that expectation that no matter how black you sonically are or whatever non-white group that you come from, there is this expectation from white audience members. They don't want to be confronted with that. And I think that artists are rejecting that. And I think that, you know, and I'm happy to see that. Kendrick Lamar, you know, swept the Grammy nominations being unapologetically black. We're seeing, you know, Amanda Stenberg, who's one of the young up and coming actresses in Hollywood, has been incredibly vocal about her blackness.
And she is so young too, by the way, which is phenomenal. I'm a big fan of hers.
Right. I mean, and I just think it's so great. You know, I had a chance to interview her last year, and that was something that's very much a part of her identity and her professional work. And so I think that that's important because at the same token, white artists aren't expected to hide their whiteness in the sense, and we're so used to thinking about whiteness as the default, but you know, you have artists who will say, you know, I don't know much about black culture, or will whitewash black art forms, and that is a form, or I should say that is a very habitual action in whiteness, and yet that's accepted. But that's a part of whiteness as an identity, that erasure in a lot of ways. And but we don't think of that. We don't ask them to hide that. So I think that we just really have a lot of reckoning with how we look at identity. And this is what these artists are challenging us to do.
And I want to get to the politics of Lemonade in a moment, but let's focus for a minute on the artistry of Lemonade, because I watched the visual version of her album, and she's released the whole album as individual songs, and then she dropped this visual album where she strung together all the songs, and in between the songs had very poignant and powerful poetry. It's the poetry of Warsan Shire, this young poet from London who's part Kenyan, part Somali. And she's an award-winning poet, but you know, probably that many American audiences hadn't heard of her until now. So the artistry with which Beyoncé wove the visuals and the words was pretty impressive. I want to play for our audiences a little snippet of the trailer of Lemonade.
The past and the present merge to meet us here. What are you hiding? Lovers as trees. Why can't you see me?
Why can't you see me? And I think that it feels like that particular line of poetry that Beyoncé reads is a very powerful line. The artistry was really incredible. I was quite floored. Some people are talking about her possibly, you know, winning some major awards for this work. She's the executive producer of this video. You know, one might imagine that Beyoncé is just sort of this person who is the talent, but she is the executive producer on this entire album. And I don't think we give enough credit to artists like her, to an unapologetically black woman artist like her, for the artistry that she has brought into this album. I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
In general, we underestimate how smart artists can be, you know, and I think that for every Britney Spears, so to speak, there's a Michael Jackson. And not to say that they're in any way compared in terms of, there's a comparison in terms of talent, but in terms of the absolute involvement and how much of that comes from the artist, you know? And I think that's very threatening to think of artists as business persons, as executive producers, as the art directors. I think we find that incredibly intimidating for whatever reason. And I do think that we don't give her enough credit for how sharply she focuses her, not just her brand. I think that's very limiting. Her vision and getting people on board that can express her vision in a very unique and even quirky way. I think that's pretty familiar when you look at just like black women artists, like from the very beginning, like Bessie Smith, you know, who Queen Latifah portrayed in the HBO special last year. Another woman who was incredibly, you know, in control of her art. Tina Turner, another woman, incredibly in control of her art. Even FKA Twigs, who most people kind of know her as Robert Pattinson's fiance, incredibly controlled with her work. She even does her own makeup. So I just think that people are very limited with how they look at what artists can do, especially what Black women artists can do.
And what's interesting, of course, even though we're talking about this album as being unapologetically Black, she does bring in white artists like Jack White, Robert Plant, incredibly high-profile artists, but it's still her work, and she still sort of ties it all together. Let's talk about the politics, which I found the most interesting part of this, and which is the reason why I actually wanted to cover this story. In the visual album, Lemonade, she samples a Malcolm X clip where he talks about Black women. Here it is.
The most disrespected person in America is the Black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the Black woman. The most neglected person in America is the Black woman.
And that is Malcolm X in a speech that he gave talking about Black women. Beyonce samples this clip in her album Lemonade, where she just has these images of Black women. What do you make of this? What is she saying here?
I think she's recentering Black women. And I think that, you know, I think that Black women, it's very complex. And I think that even amongst Black women, I think that there's a lot of unpacking that, you know, internally and in those circles that we're still doing in terms of, I think that there is this expectation that Black women work and are remunerated poorly, if at all, and they're invisible. And I think that that goes back to, you know, she's bringing that statement, you know, because obviously Malcolm X is very visible and a lot of people are totally unaware that he makes that statement. But Black women, in terms of our contributions, they're incredibly invisible. And Nicki Minaj has talked about that, and she came under fire last year because people felt that she was attacking Taylor Swift, when the truth was that she was just speaking very explicitly and very truthfully. And there is this expectation, and I think it has a lot to do with the way in which the slavery hierarchy was constructed, and that, you know, Black women did not benefit from whiteness nor maleness. So when you look at systems of patriarchy, you know, obviously whiteness and or the American patriarchy, whiteness and maleness are the most, you know, privileged intersections that one can occupy in heterosexuality. But when you take a Black woman, which doesn't benefit from those, but yet when you're looking at the system of slavery, it's very much dependent upon Black womanhood, from the actual production of slaves from a reproductive standpoint to the running and management of households. But yet that part is completely erased. We don't talk about it historically. And when you look at pop music, there's so many contributions of Black women that are ignored, the civil rights movement. So I think that this is her way of recentering those massive contributions and saying, we need to talk about Black women and where they are right now.
Right. And speaking of the issue of slavery, I mean, the song Freedom by that she features Kendrick Lamar is very explicit. I mean, the chorus is essentially, I need freedom too. I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom rot in hell. I'ma keep running because a winner don't quit on themselves. So very like explicit, breaking the chains, wanting freedom, freedom from, you know, all types of slavery, because metaphorically slavery continues today. You know, when Prince wrote the word slave on his cheek, he was making a statement as well. And it's so interesting to me that this whole album drops literally like a week, you know, days after Prince dies. And one of the other two things that those two artists have in common, Beyonce and Prince, is that they were very, as you were saying, controlling of their art. They were also really strong on wanting artists to get paid for their art. And it's interesting that Beyonce is not making this album available anywhere except through channels that you do have to pay for it. It's not that much, like $17-$18, but you have to pay for it. You can't get it for free.
Absolutely. I support that, you know, and I think that it's a business. And for some reason there is, you know, and I think people are talking about it more. There is this expectation that artists are supposed to be poor.
And I can relate. That's the same with journalists, right, Chandra?
Right. and that these things are supposed to be available for free, and they're just not. And I don't think that, you know, and that goes back to this idea that artists can't be business persons. And I think that this just goes back to kind of this national, we have a very poor way of thinking about what art is. Art to me is doing something subliminally well, with inspiration, with discipline. And so we, you know, in the same way that Steve Jobs was considered an artist, by all accounts, he was a very poor poet. And so in terms of, and poor musician, but the way in which he exercised his business and his vision, absolutely, he's considered a visionary. He's considered an artist. And so I think that we have to expand what artist means, because putting people in a very small box of, oh, well, you create this visual thing, you create this painting, you need to do a masterpiece, but you're supposed to live hand to mouth. It's just incongruent.
Right. I mean, it's a class issue as well. If the only people who can afford to make art, make journalism, make content, make media, are those who have other means of survival, then you are essentially privileging only those few people. Of course, Beyoncé is certainly not. I mean, she's worked hard to get where she is, but right. She is one of the probably top paid artists in the business. And so, but what she does can have repercussions and pave the way for lesser artists or lesser known artists, I should say.
Yeah. And I think she's aware of that. And I think she's super aware of that. I think Prince was very aware of that when he signed with Tidal, as they should be. And I think that more artists should think about their controlling their masters, controlling whatever those masters are, you know, that switches depending on the industry, but really controlling as much of their product as possible. We don't expect for fashion designers to create things for free. We don't even expect to have our gas and our light for free. And there is a very good argument that those things, which are natural resources, should be free. So I don't understand why people would expect a product which takes so much time, so much training, so much emotional labor to be for free.
And you mentioned Tidal. Tidal is the company that Beyoncé and Jay-Z, I believe it's Jay-Z's company, started to try to change the way music is, our relationship with music and the internet today. All right, let's continue our conversation around the political significance of Lemonade. In the last few minutes of our conversation, two things that I wanted to bring up. One is that you feature Serena Williams in this, in the visual documentary version, if you will, of her album. Serena Williams, the mega superstar tennis champion, one of very few black women in tennis who has come, you know, who's really stood very strong and who has been criticized for her physique, her body, her power, her strength, and who's remained strong. And I think Beyoncé was making a pretty strong statement in bringing Serena Williams on as a collaborator and featuring her in the video, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was a stand of solidarity. And I think that, you know, Beyoncé doesn't make written statements or even vocal statements. She sort of speaks in ciphers and visuals. And she's standing in solidarity with Serena. And she's rejecting all of these criticisms about her body. And I think what she's doing by amplifying Serena as a black woman, as the most interesting athlete playing today, she's also just saying, you know what, like, we're also just decentering the white gaze and we're decentering the male gaze, and this is just going to be a space where we amplify and celebrate ourselves for the damn hard work that we do to be at the top of our game. It's not just that we're the top black women. We are the top. She is the biggest superstar. Serena is the most successful athlete, period, like playing right now, that's active. And I just think that they're just sort of like, we're going to celebrate without qualification.
The other aspect of Black women that she displays in her video, Beyoncé displays, are the mothers of men who've been shot by police. The mother of Mike Brown holding his photograph, Eric Garner and his mother, and of course, Trayvon Martin. His photo being held by his mother, and it's pretty powerful. I was the most, like, the part that I felt the most close to tears watching Lemonade were those scenes. The scene where Mike Brown's mother looks right into your eyes and a tear rolls down her cheek. I was blown away by that.
Yeah, I mean, I was so happy that she did that. I mean, these women are often forgotten when we talk about police brutality. And I think that there's this fatigue about the subject because we are saying the same thing over and over again. We're reporting it. And no one is really talking about the human collateral, the human damage of this. And I think that, and also too, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the erasure of Black women in the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that that happens on a lot of levels, from, you know, who has sort of made a career out of Black Lives Matter and who sort of, you know, like started, who's, you know, who's been amplified by the mainstream media. But then also we disproportionately look at the lives of men and not the women who are also victims, but also the women that are left to pick up the pieces. You know, when these men are killed, it's the mothers, the sisters, the aunts, the grandmothers that are left to bury them. It's the mothers, yeah. Right. They're left to keep the families intact. And I think that's her way of saying that.
And then finally, we didn't get to talk about this, but the whole album itself and the visual part of it seems to be, although it's never explicitly said, although gets pretty close, is Beyoncé's own personal struggle with marital infidelity and choosing to forgive her husband for what I'm assuming is marital infidelity. It's pretty like overt actually in the film, but it's all centered on her and her agency and her power and her decision making, which I thought was also remarkable, because we have a tendency to judge women, say, who remain with their unfaithful husbands. We have a tendency to see them as victims, and she's anything but a victim in this film, at least.
Yeah, she's choosing to stay in the sense that she's like, I've created a life with this person. I still love this person. And it's not that she's making these things permissible or okay, but she's saying, I have taken this thing that's happened and I have created my own agency around it, and I have made it something that I want, this is how I will live with it. And I just think that that is really powerful. And I think that, you know, what's more powerful is that she's clearly saying, you know, acting out in the sense that I want this marriage, I'm in love with this person, but my dignity and my agency have been compromised. And this is the way in which I gain these things back. And I think that that's, you know, because Jay-Z is super aware of all of this, you know, I'm sure he wasn't blindsided in any way. And I think that she stood up and said, you know, this is what I have to do to heal. This is what I have to do to have my equilibrium in this relationship. And I think that that's really powerful. Marriages are hard. People make mistakes. But I think that the more difficult thing is figuring out how do you start over or how do you heal with those things that have been compromised or taken away from you, reinstated.
Right, and artists the world over have known that the best art comes from the deepest pain, that you mine your pain for art, and that looks like that's what she's done. Shadria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
My guest is Shadria LaBouvier. She is a writer for Elle magazine. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and get our interviews on iTunes and Vimeo.